Ladies and gentlemen, strap in that which can be strapped in. It's the Ogre Cave Audio Report. I'm Mike Sugarbaker.
And this is Alan Sugarbaker.
And this is Chris Hanrahan with Endgame in Oakland, California.
We're recording on Thursday, March 1st. I don't remember who I was talking to, but we were talking about how role-playing games get set up at all the gaming conventions. And people who love role-playing games are pretty much always uniformly let down. Like, even at Gen Con, it's not as good of an environment for role-playing as it is at DungeonCon. And now that I've gotten a better sense for just how widespread that is, I think we have to stop considering DungeonCon a small con, you know, if we did. Because I think in a lot of ways it's leading the way, and it has a great longevity, as they like to remind people. And anyway, DungeonCon happened, and Alan went, and he recorded some things.
Yes, I did.
What did you record, Alan?
I recorded an interview with Joseph Goodman of Goodman Games and Stephen Chenault, however he pronounces his name. I always have to apologize to him from Trollord Games.
Apologize for me to him as well.
I'm very sorry.
Okay.
They had a bunch of announcements for the year. They also partook of the State of the Industry seminar, which had Ken Height in the Peanut Gallery and Darren Watts from Hero Games, Aldo Giazzi of Impressions. So that was interesting as well. But basically, to focus on them, I managed to get a quiet area of the con, and here's what they had to say.
All right, this is Alan at OgreCave.com, and we are coming to we are coming to you from DungeonCon on Sunday evening from a room provided to us by the Roleplay Workshop. Becky was nice enough to give us a room that's quiet until these guys came in.
So we're here today with Joseph Goodman and Steve Chenault, Goodman Games and Trollord Games, respectively.
And in true Ogre Cave podcast tradition, we have to ask, what's everyone drinking this evening? Steve?
Guinness.
All right.
Corona.
All right, and I'm not drinking a damn thing. So, yesterday you guys announced a bunch of things that you were coming out with, and the biggest one, most surprising one, I won't say biggest.
Yeah, man, what's up with that?
Most surprising.
I'm the one drinking the Guinness right now.
Ooh. Suddenly it's all about size. the Monty Cook's doing a Dungeon Crawl Classics title. I guess that's the other product he's coming, the other cookbook.
The other cookbook. It has recipes for great dungeons.
Excellent. That's coming out in Gen Con.
Right.
Vault of the Iron Overlord.
It's Vault of the Island Overlord.
You lie. You made me correct that earlier today because I heard you wrong before.
Greg, it's Vault of the Iron Overlord.
Both words, vault and iron, have been used multiple times in other Dungeon Crawl classics, but this one will be over and beyond.
We've used Dog like 17 titles now.
Man,
we're trying to get that out.
You're so unoriginal.
Vaulto, Nabo, Iron Overlord. Along those lines. Yeah, we're working on the title.
But at this point, that's a 10-con release.
Yeah, so Monty Cook's loved the Dungeon Crawl Classics line for a long time. In his year's best D20, 2 years ago, I think it was, he actually mentioned that he wished he could have included segments of Crypt of the Devil Age, which is number 15 in the series, if the book had focused on modules. But of course, it was a source book oriented best of compilation. But yeah, he loves the series, and when he retired from RPG writing, it gave him a chance to do what he wanted to do, and one of those things was write a dungeon crawl. So it worked out really good. It's an awesome adventure, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Is it going to be above and beyond size-wise, or is it going to be like the others?
Everything Goodman Games does is above and beyond size-wise.
Back to the size issue. All right.
It's a 32-page module. The fun part is, you know, like a combat wheel, like Hackmaster has a combat wheel, like one of those things that converts inches to centimeters where you rotate and all that stuff.
I avoid everything Hackmaster, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, the map for this actually has a series of rings in the dungeon that rotate. So the map for the module will feature in the back. I don't even know how to describe this. It's like one of those things you did in like sixth grade where you put the pin through and it rotates.
Okay.
Yeah, so the map in the back of the module actually feature rotating maps. Oh, neat. So it's cool. One of the aspects of the dungeon is the map will change as time goes on, so the characters have to sort of be smart as they get through it. It's going to be cool.
And as it picks up speed, they start flying off. And
possibly, never, yeah.
Never mind.
How fast you spin the map.
And about the same time that's coming out, Steve, you're planning Castle Zagig, right?
We have the dungeon levels of Castle Zagig coming out.
Dungeon
the
level.
First four of the castle and the first four levels of Gary Gygax's Castle Greyheart, trademark Wizards of the Coast. The Castle Zagig material, which is obviously all Gary Gygax, and it's his original dungeons that he's been playing for decades on end. And the first sections of those will come out. It's 17 legs and 19 levels, something like that. And the first four levels will come out at Gen Con.
Okay.
And Gary should be at the booth off and on. We're going to have easy chairs at the booth, so folks should come on by and have some drinks. Meet up with Gary there. Visit with Gary. But yeah, that's our big Gen Con release. We also got that Castle Sheepers guide coming out at Gen Con. And
how much of your sales each year are Gen Con? I'm just curious. As a side issue. Not is that a huge one?
It's
or?
Not huge, but it's
a big expense just to be there.
It's a summer bump. Yeah, I mean, certainly August is a little bit better, but it's not bad.
But it's also like a marketing event. All these guys, these are the alpha gamers who see the product, think it's cool, go home to their group.
Yeah, it's a marketing event. That's what it's supposed to be.
I think so.
That's what we're doing wrong. We thought it was a drinking fest.
Sorry. We're in drinking. That's why I was around in Milwaukee.
That's right, yeah.
There's good drinking there.
I know Dungeoneer RPG won't be out, not even this year, most likely, right?
Probably early 08. Yeah, that's an awesome system. It's a card-based role-playing game. It's very simple. I mean, you can play it. Yeah, you know what it's like.
I saw it a little bit, but, I'm not the one talking to the podcast.
You're right. I guess I should. So, yeah, to the viewers at home, you're not even looking. To the listeners at home, Dungeoneer RPG is a great new role-playing game. It's fantasy with a twist. There are 900 pages that you have to read to play D&D. You got to spend $90. It's a very well-balanced, realistic system that accurately portrays, combat in a fantasy world, etc. But it's really complex. Steve knows this with CNC. Dungeoneer as a concept has been done by Tom Denmark as a card-based, expandable card game is what he has right now. And he hit on some cool concepts like glory and peril and just the way to use cards to simplify a lot of the system and so on. And he's been working on this RPG for probably like 3 years now. And it's reached a point where it's very elegant. It's just a very simple system. The word count for the rules is actually less than the word count of the three books in the original D&D 3-book edition.
Okay.
And it's just a cool little system. So we've been kind of talking about it for quite a while. And it looks like, it'll be when it comes out.
Yeah, we went through the character creation and a little bit beyond that, and it was so fast.
Yeah, it's awesome. You don't get bogged down by anything, but you can make a very versatile character very quickly.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to that. And I'm also more and more thinking I need to make some time to play Castles and Crusades. The more I look at your product line.
It's pretty good game. It's pretty good. They're on the third printing.
We're at the third printing probably the next 2 months.
Yeah.
Probably the big C, aside from the CKG, the big CNC release for the year will be the basic set. And what we're going to do is retool the game itself, put it in a box set, sell it, I think it's $19.95. We'll have a monster book of CKG and players deal in there. And it'll be geared for younger guys or people. It's really a streamlined version of a game that's already streamlined. But the hope is that we will appeal to younger gamers. It's going to have fixed character classes. If you're an elf, you're an elf. These are your abilities. If you're a dwarf, you're a dwarf. These are your abilities. Sort of like, I think, old basic D&D did that to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think that's exactly what they did.
To some degree. The classes were fighter, wizard,
right.
Elf, dwarf, Chinese person.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's just so strange to see a race slapped in there as the class.
But that'll come out. It also has more how-to play in it. So it's good. I mean, I can't remember. Somebody said at some point that a lot of people, if you're walking in the industry and you pick up whatever, there's no instructions. And in my book, I'm guilty of it, as everybody else is.
Yeah.
There's no instructions on how to play a role-playing game. And we're going to kind of concentrate on that side of things and specifically how to play Castles and Crusades. But yeah, that'll be our big CNC release for the year. I think that and the CKG, which I know people look forward to. Now, people really need to look at the Crusader magazine. I hear tell we've got a good support base building for it from other publishers. What's his name? Goodman Games? Is that So we're going to really beef up the Crusader magazine. And of course, I've been saying this for 2 years. And these guys who subscribed like 2 years ago, yeah, we heard that, Steve. But yeah, we're We're going to gear up with the Crusader this year. Really, hopefully hitting at least every 2 months on the thing. That's really shooting the Crusader. We're going to try to have one more out this year for Christmas. That's the hope.
As far as he was mentioning the introductory rules for, you know, explaining role-playing, I was looking through the draft that Richard, the author of, or co-author of Dungeoneer, had. There was a lot of example work put in there, a lot of walkthrough, you know, this person says this person responds with this, and he almost seemed a little bit embarrassed that there was so much, and I was trying to be encouraging, saying, keep that in there. There's not enough of this in products these days.
Yeah. I think it's definitely good,
yeah.
And I think Dungeoneer appears to maybe a younger gamer, more modern gamer. All the DCC stuff that I've done, or the CNC stuff, is aimed at kind of the more experienced gamer, but when you're doing a CNC, you know, basic set, or Dungeoneer is sort of aimed from the beginning at maybe the video gamer, you might say, It's good to have that kind of introductory material, because they might not be exposed to it. Most of us learned because our older brother played, or the kid down the street played.
Right.
I mean, nobody actually knew how to play D&D when we were kids. I had it wrong. I remember when I discovered, I thought hit dice were what you rolled to make the monster attack. So I remember, like, when I had an 8 hit die monster, I'd roll, like, 8d8 and add them up as the attack roll. I mean, I played like that for, like, 6 months before somebody clued me in that I was wrong. I mean, I think most of us played RPGs completely wrong for a long time.
I think your group I joined at some point way back in the dawn of time, they played the hit dice were hit points. So if you had an 8 hit dice, it had 8 hit points.
Yeah, see?
And it was obviously that's not the case. That's not the rule set, but
we were all kind of had it wrong. It's because the games didn't do a good job of explaining it. And even now, they don't always do a great job of explaining it. So it's good to have the introductory.
To some extent, when you're younger, you're so excited to play, you skim.
That's the biggest problem with RPGs. You're younger, and you're excited, and you skim, and if you got 17,000 pages to read, you're not going to do it.
And you start reading Gary Gygax's DMG and get to the part where he's describing the bell curve, and you go, what the hell? Forget that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff.
I mean, I'm a D20 publisher, and I've never read the Player's Handbook. I mean, come on, it's like 300 pages.
Yeah, it's way too much.
I'm kidding.
I wasn't going to say anything.
No, I have read it, but I'm telling you, seriously, as a fan, you know?
Really jive, right?
There's no good pictures down here. They're really attractive.
There's no center. What's going on? There's more words in the center. I didn't get it. Nothing folded out.
Nothing folded out. No, that was Slayer's Guide to Amazon. Someone had to go there. Why, I'm not sure.
But you get the idea. It's a lot of reading.
It's way too much reading. That's the worst thing about this.
No damn role-playing game. It's too much reading.
Too much reading and fans suck. That's the
no, I like the fans.
Fans are good.
A pro fan. Isn't that a company, Fan Pro?
Yes, it is. Let's see. What else is coming from Goodman? Wicked Fantasy. You're coming out with a new line.
Yeah.
For those young fans who can't get through a massive book. Hopefully not. Or have a shorter attention span and need something that's going to hold their attention a little bit more.
Yeah, like Fat Loot. Wicked Fantasy Factory is a new line of modules that are essentially hack and slash in the same vein as Dungeon Crawl Classics. Like, they're a very simple premise. It's about having fun, kicking down doors, fighting monsters, stealing the treasure. But the DCCs aim specifically at an older audience by imitating essentially the bad layout and sort of a stylistic art of the early 80s, whereas the Wicked Fantasy Factory has a layout and an appeal that's based more on video games. All the art is digital, has color maps, it uses terminology and spelling that's, you know, reminiscent of text messaging. I mean, it's really designed to appeal to a certain more modern audience. And we'll see how it goes. I think it'll go really well. Everything so far has turned out really good. But it also includes some rules innovations, like Luke Johnson, the developer of the line, developed some very cool simplified stat blocks. The D20 stat blocks right now are monstrous. They can be very long.
Yeah.
If you play combat with them, you know it can be hard to find. You really need the attack roll, the damage modifier, a couple of the skills sometimes, and maybe some of the special abilities. But it can be hard to find what you need in these monstrous stat blocks. He has a new design for stat blocks, which is very simple and very elegant and very easy to use in combat. So the module series uses that. It also has some special rules for finishing moves. So all characters, remember in Mortal Kombat, where they'd be like, finish him, and you could like rip the guy's heart out.
Yeah.
You can do that in these modules. It has special rules for mowing down hordes of minions. So like when you fight the kobolds, everybody gets the cleave and great cleave feat. so you can just like mow them down. It's lots of fun. So it mimics the video game experience. It has like level bosses that have special powers if they're a level boss. Mm-hmm. It's just it makes it a lot of fun. It makes D&D kind of like video games in a way that I think younger gamers will identify with.
I can see people in my group, with my age group, wanting me to run this. Dude, it's got finishing moves. Come on.
Exactly. It's cool. It's fun. I mean, the playtesters loved it. Like, Luke's group, he ran for his own group, and they loved it. I sent it out to the playtesters, they loved it, too. They suggested, actually, new finishing moves, like the ways to give spellcasters finishing moves, etc. But, I mean, yeah, it's really cool. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. All right. And that's, when is that coming out or starting?
The first one's coming out in May.
Cool.
And we also will have one for Free RPG Day coming out on June 23rd.
Right.
If you guys haven't heard about that, go to freerpgday.com. Trollhard, Governor Elvin, and Spearhead, it's a great event. You guys have probably all heard of Free Comic Book Day. The goal here is Free RPG Day. So it's an opportunity for stores to promote the hobby to all their fan base and give out basically free RPGs. So if you're a consumer, this is a great chance to get free stuff. Just go to your local store on June 23rd. Or go to freerpgday.com to find a store near you.
Find out which stores are doing it. Right.
Yeah. And if your local store is not doing it, then
they suck.
Well, go in and ask them and say, hey, go to freerpgday.com and check it out and sign up and the whole thing.
Yeah, because we got a free Dungeon Crawl Classics module. We got a free Castles and Crusades
quick start rules. And we may throw a module in there. We'll see. I can hardly get anything out, much less get, two things out of time. Apparently, I got to make this one on time. So.
And we got a free Wicked Fantasy Factory module coming out as well. Plus, we got support from all sorts of publishers. Like Green Ronin is in, Flying Buffalo is in, we got Mongoose Publishing is in, White Wolf is in. Tons of publishers are already participating. They're not official yet, but they indicated
you'll
probably hear
it.
Something soon about their signing up. Yeah.
Cool. So okay. Yeah, who wouldn't want to go down to their game store and get some free
stuff? It's free! How can you go wrong? Yeah. And we're working on Free Beer Day for next year.
That's what I'm talking about.
A game store near you.
Go down to your local bar. Wait.
No, the game store.
Oh, okay. All right.
Or at the booth, at least. I don't
know. Come to DunderCon for Free Beer Day.
Hey, that's right. It's Lake Geneva Con.
Yeah.
Really good attendance.
We have a keg at the booth.
That's right.
Please come by.
So I didn't tell you about. I don't know. You got anything else you gotta add?
Probably. Go ahead. I got a whole bunch of stuff for this year, but I can't.
Well, you've got a couple of box sets this year, right?
Well, we've got a couple of direct-to-consumer box sets, direct-to-retailer box sets. So the red box for Insane and the white box for the World of Aaron, which will be Castles and Crusades stuff. And it'll be the limited edition white box, mimicking the white box we did for the Castles and Crusades game a couple of years ago. So those two, they're slated for a Gen Con release as well. And it'll have, they'll be kind of set up like the old box sets, like we did before. That'll be the first, actually, the cool thing about that, that'll be the first time Inzaia, which is Aired General World, is actually put in print and out. Folks have asked about it for a long time. We've done a few modules about Inzaia. We talk about it and some of the other stuff, the Codex Sphere and stuff like that, but it'll actually see the light of day, which will be kind of cool.
Cool.
So that's, we got a, that's Gen Con, some other stuff at Gen Con. There's something, Crusader. Troller Game survives on the extraordinary patience. Troller Game survives on the extraordinary patience of its consumer base. But we've got, well, there's things in the works. We're really shooting. Gary's going to be at Gen Con. For those folks who don't know, Gary Gygax has come to Gen Con. He hadn't been in like 3 or 4 or 5 years. Well, since he left Milwaukee, I suppose. And he's coming down for the show, and we're going to try to do a lot of Gygax material. But we've got, he's given us a game about a year ago called Kings of England, Kings of France, and it's a board card game. It's based in 14th century France. It's a really cool little game, and we're shooting hard to have that thing out at Gen Con.
Oh, nice.
Gary's also got the Canton Crew Revisited coming out, which will take the Canton Crew, which came out 2001 or so, dress it up, drop the price, give it a better trade dress, the whole nine yards. It'll be a much, much better presentation than it was before. What else? And then Gary's LA line. We're really picking up the LA line this year. We've got about 7 releases. We're shooting for 9 releases.
Legendary Adventures.
Legendary Adventures. Yeah. Gary's home game. That's the game he plays. That's the game he's published and made. It's really a smart game. Castles and Crusades is a class-based game. Legendary Adventures is a skill-based game. It's really where Gary was moving Dungeons & Dragons when he was at the helm of TSR back in the day. It's a really, really good game. It's lacked support from its publisher. That would be Troller Games. we're going to turn that around this year. I've got quite a bit slated for LA to gear that thing up. It is a really good game. If you haven't checked it out, you can see a lot of it at Gen Con.
So you're getting into
well, and you've been doing it for a while now, but you're getting back into more supporting multiple lines at once.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joseph does the same thing.
Right.
How hard is that in today's marketplace in particular? You were talking about it a little bit at the State of the Industry seminar earlier today, having multiple lines and trying to gauge how much support is the right amount without overdoing it or overextending yourself.
It's hard. It's tough. It's tough to know to push that envelope. You're pushing the miniatures on the one side. We did the Planet Busters, which started with the board game. It's tough to figure out how many resources you need to allocate to this and what kind of capital it's going to take and how you're going to market it. And it's tough.
But also, fans are kind of self-selecting. I mean, you look at sales numbers, which is their way of voting, and they tell you where they want to go. And sometimes you gotta get the data points, you know, which can mean releasing something as a test or whatever it might be. But fans ultimately tell you, although you gotta make the decision where to go and what direction and then how to read the data. But fans let you know. They vote with their dollar, as it's been said. Yeah.
All right.
So I gotta tell you about Castle White Rock.
Castle White Rock.
Yeah.
Sounds like a beer.
It is actually a new beer from Goofy Games. So we had this, there's a writer named Chris Doyle, another writer named Adrian Pommier, and the two of them have been working on Dungeon Crawl Classics for several years. They basically put together the first tournament module we did, Crypt of the Devil Lich.
Right.
Chris has worked on number 7, Secret of Smuggler's Cove, the Dragon Fiend Pack, number 11, worked on number 15, Lost Tomb of the Sphinx Queen. And Adrian's done several as well. He was also responsible for last year's Gen Con tournament, Palace in the Waste, which went over extremely well. But they've been working on this castle crawl, like a dungeon crawl, it's just a big one for several years. And I finally officially commissioned it for the line. You know, it's going to be a big, like maybe a 256-page kind of hardcover kind of product, that kind of thing.
Oh.
And they turned in the manuscript a couple months ago, and they exceeded the word count by a couple of 100,000 words.
Jeez.
So I now have a 400,000-word manuscript, which is the largest manuscript I've ever published. It's actually equal to the entire output of Goodman Games for its first 2 years in business. So at DinCon this year, we'll be releasing Castle White Rock as a 500-page dungeon crawl. It's an awesome adventure. It takes characters from level 1 to level 15. Each level of the dungeon corresponds to one character level. So by the time you get to level 2, your second level characters, get to level 3, your third level, etc.
Oh, wow.
All the way down. And it's going to be a massive box set. It'll have 4 books of Castle Crawl, 128 pages each. It'll have a separate booklet of maps, a separate booklet of player handouts, a boatload of big poster maps. We don't know how many yet. It depends on how much material there is for the maps. And
right.
There's tons. We have to figure out how to sort it all out. But it's going to be an awesome dungeon crawl, one of those sort of once-in-a-career experiences to produce something that's just a phenomenal dungeon crawl. The product will probably weigh about 15 pounds. It's going to be a great thing. And that'll be out at Gen Con, all 400,000 words for it.
Holy cow.
Yeah, Castle White Rock, baby. It's going to be awesome. Free beer with purchase.
Compromise, beer-colored dice.
Beer-colored dice?
There you go.
That's pretty cool, actually. We should get to Chessex.
I think I saw some, yes. We didn't mention about your plans for the Dungeoneer RPG. Not only is it going to be relatively brief compared to the other big fantasy RPGs out there, it's going to have cards with it, which makes sense. And you're thinking maybe even miniatures.
Yeah, the format's going to be more like an adventure game. I mean, I think Steve pointed this out a lot, that modern era role-playing games have gone beyond the realm of just a game. It used to be something you'd play with kids and introduce new people to and just kind of play a game. Whereas now, it's like an investment. I mean, you got to spend $90 on the core books.
It's an investment of time, too. I mean,
yeah.
It takes time to even learn the game.
Yeah. You can't just pick it up and play. And it doesn't even feel as much fun as it used to. It used to come in a box with dice and a pencil and maps and booklets and everything. And now they come as these huge hardback books. And so I think with Dungeoneer, we want to try to recapture some of that fun factor. So it'll have, we don't know exactly what it'll have yet, but it's going to have some cards, because it's an RPG that is card-based, so it uses a lot of cards. Have a couple, like a rules booklet, a world booklet. We're talking about Glooms and Miniatures as well. And then also some, they use Glory and Peril, which are these two kind of tokens that
right.
evaluate a character's potential for great actions and their ability to attract the attention of monsters. But it'll have tokens for those, some tokens for wounds, etc. But the whole appeal, it'll feel like a fun game, but it's a role-playing game, but it'll feel like something fun and easy to get into. Which will be, it'll be great. It'll be a very good
game. And that is actually a key that when the castles will say it's basic set, we'll have little card pieces for the miniatures, kind of lock up. The key to that is to get, especially with young players, to get their hands on something. I mean, not just sitting there looking at some paper and some dude behind a screen and rolling dice.
Yeah.
Which we are certainly all accustomed to, and we enjoy it, and et cetera, et cetera. But younger guys, they're a little bit, they've got a different experience. And getting their hands on actually the tokens from this, it's a good approach.
Right, and if they're used to a computer game that presents everything right. for them and they don't have to visualize,
right.
then at least giving them a little help toward that so it's not just cold turkey, no visual input.
When you put miniatures into the actual role-playing experience, it makes it a little bit more like a board game, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not. You can make it as much as you want, however much you put in your techniques and tips.
Yeah. No matter what anyone says, D&D 3.0 and 3.5 are miniatures
right.
combat games yeah. with a role-playing skin stretched over them.
Right. Yeah. And there is a way, I think, to cross-pollinate the two types of games, and I think Dungeoneer sounds like it's got it, and that's really what we're shooting for the basic set as well, is to really give them something hands-on, easy, quick, fun, hands-on, and the beer. Beer and bags, that would fit in the box.
By the end of the evening, you will have it figured out.
That's right.
We'll solve this conundrum.
We need one more beer to do it.
We need to get some more fluid.
You guys work together a lot.
We talk a lot. I think we actually keep the lines pretty separate, but we've got the same customer base, I think, and yeah. a lot of the same kind of philosophies. Joe's got direction far quicker, obviously, than TLG did, but there's definitely the same.
Well, and Trollers, they have their finger on the pulse in a lot of ways. Like, I think what they're doing with pricing is important. With RPGs, they expand based on networks of players, and this is something I've sort of grown to understand over the years of doing it, but it really matters who's playing a game for you to decide to play the game, because you have to play it with other people, as opposed to just a game like Command & Conquer or Mortal Kombat or something on your computer that you just play with yourself or with one friend. But with RPGs, you want to find other people to play the game. And to do that, you need to expand the network, and one way to expand the network is to make it cheap and easy to enter. And Steve's done that with CNC. It's a $19.99 hardback. I mean, it's great. But we just think the same way in a lot of, like, I thought about the $2 modules, which is my equivalent, but we think on the same lines a lot of time, and so we end up bouncing ideas off each other.
Yeah. And other people. You've done the $2 modules a couple of times. You were talking earlier today, Steve, about how when you needed to revise your plan and get out of the D20 glut,
right.
when you came out with Castles and Crusades, you dropped the price. You didn't bring it up to try to...
Yeah, it's a paradigm, is that the right word? Paradox. Well, a lot of manufacturers... A lot of manufacturers, as soon as the boom ended... and their sales began to decline, they responded to that by raising prices. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can make your money back by a drop in units, blah, blah. We didn't, and I'll say this today, it was 100% co-owner toward games. I mean, he pushed hard. No. Our sales are dropping, we need to drop price. We need to make the game more affordable, make it more reachable. And so the people, it's a new game, it's a new concept. We're basically going head-to-head with Dungeons & Dragons, with Castles and Crusades, because it is a D&D-based game.
That's hard.
And it's the big boy on the block. Yeah. It's the 300-pound gorilla, or whatever they say. Gorilla, as we say in our song. We really, you've got to make it so that consumers can get the game, and it's not a huge thing to get the game, and the $20 price tag was it. And that, and it's all bundled in one book. I mean, it's still a concept people aren't grasping at all. I've made the pitch 400 times here at DungeonCon. The game is in the player's handbook. There's no monsters. There's a few monsters in the player's handbook, second printing, but there's no. You don't get your monsters. You don't get your treasure. But to how to learn to play Castles and Crusades is all contained in a 128-page book. Period. That's it. It costs $20. That's all you really need to play. And you sure if you don't have the monster book, you're going to have to make your own monsters, etc. So you certainly want the monster book, but. The game is, in a nutshell, 120. And really, the rules are like 4 pages. Explaining the attribute check is about 4 pages. Most of that player's handbook is spells. I wrote a huge section on kind of how to run games and keep your characters interested and whatnot, and the classes and stuff. So it's really 4 pages. So, yeah. Not very much. But, yeah. And that's the challenge of the basic set, is to actually take that and make it even more consumable to even younger gamers. To expand on the whole concept of Castles and Crusades, and part of it, and Gary grasped this instantly, this is the genius of Gary, one of the geniuses of Gary. When you pick up the Zagic material, and you'll see you'll see the first section of it come out, it's the first dungeon section come out of Gen Con. Gary realized what we had done is made a game here that is very malleable to the way you play. So if you want skills and feats, or if you want this, or if you want that, you add it. And it's very, very easy to add to the Castles and Crusades experience. So whatever kind of role-playing you do, Castles and Crusades really offers that to you. If you want it very, very simple, like I tend to want, you don't do anything to it. You just want to look what you got. If you want it a little bit more complicated, you add skills. And if you pick up the Zagig setting book, the Yggdrasil book, it's got skills in it. It's got tons of skills in it. And you can actually see Gary's mental bridge between Dungeons & Dragons and Legendary Adventures. Class-based game, skill-based game. And if you look at Zagig, he's taking a class-based game, Castles and Crusades, adding skills to it. There's a beautiful bridge there. I mean, that really is what one of the really good things I think about Castles and Crusades. It's very malleable to the game.
We also have to talk about the fact that you guys are giving discounts in May.
Yeah, 20% off sale. Last year, for the Dungeon Crawl Classics line, we did a special sale. And in retail stores only, not online, you can get 20% off. And it depends on your local store if they're participating, just like Free RPG Day. The idea is that it's an event in the store, and it's a chance for the store to showcase the line. And this year, Pro Lord is participating as well, so all Castles and Crusades adventures and modules in the core book, etc., as well as all Dungeon Crawl Classics adventures, will be on sale in a game store near you for 20% off in the month of May. Yeah, it's a great chance to stock up on stuff you haven't, tried out already. You know, pick up a couple ones you missed or try out a new line. It's just a great opportunity for you as a fan.
Yeah, approach your retailer and ask them about this. If they don't know about it, tell them to contact their distributor or one of us.
Yeah.
And we can set them up with, because they have to buy and set it up, and then they can offer the 20% off. So definitely contact your retailers. And if they're not doing it, let us know.
And it's a no-brainer for the retailer. We, as the publishers, absorb all of it. So we're providing everything for 20% off to the distributors, provide it to the retailers, provide it to the consumers. So it's just a great chance to give people a chance to try things out.
Right.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think we both like supporting retailers. I mean, I think in order for games to expand, you have to have the opportunity for people to discover them. And the best way to do that is in a retail environment. People go to their local store looking for something new. And they often find something new because there's something on the shelf that the store owner decided to put there that the person might never have come across otherwise.
Yeah.
So it's important to keep those stores in business and important to give them exciting events that draw people into the store. That's what Free RPG Day is about. That's what the 20% off sale is about. We've both done spinner rack deals that improve the presentation of our products in the stores. That's what that's about. And, we're there for the stores, baby.
That's right, baby.
Would you open a store, Joseph?
Dude, I'd love to have a game store. That'd be awesome. One of these days, I just might do it. It'd be awesome. It'd be a lot of fun, I think.
Despite all the headaches you hear retailers bitching about, you realize there's still remaining retailers. They haven't quit, so.
Oh, it's fun. I mean, the grass is always green on the other side. I'm sure a lot of retailers want to be publishers, vice versa. But it's just fun. It's fun to be involved in games. It's fun to work in games. It's fun to just to spend your time thinking about games. I mean, for all the complaints people make, dude, they're working in games,
Games for a living. What are you talking about?
I know. Get over it.
I would say on our message boards, it's one of the most pleasant internet environments I've ever seen. When you go to our message boards, I even started an insane debate about global warming, and it's all been very calm and quiet, and, people expressing their opinions and no anger. It's just really cool people having a good time talking about stuff. And that's what game stores are like. I owned a comic book store for a while, and I managed a comic book store for a while, and the customers are all cool. I mean, they come in, it's relaxed, it's really not that, it's not a high-pressure job. it's kind of cool. You're working with games or comics or whatever all day. And most of the customers, I would say 1 in 1,000 are kind of, off the wall or whatever, but most of them are just kind of cool and hanging out reading comics with you. I mean, how cool is that? Is that right?
Would you go back to running the store?
Yeah, an absolute heart.
Yeah, it'd be fun. It'd be cool.
Dave and I talk about it frequently.
So you got to open the Good Lord store. That's what you got to do.
That's what we're talking about. Good Lord Games. That would work perfectly, man.
Games and comics. All right, well, what else are you playing, either one of you? Are you taken up entirely by playtesting these days, or do you squeeze in a little something extra?
Actually, I was really excited to learn there's another Star Wars miniature set coming out. I'm still addicted to that game, so I'm glad it hasn't gone away. I'm glad it's still playing out. See, apparently there's a new Alliance and Empire set coming out in May, which I hadn't heard about. But I'm pretty stoked about that. I've got all the other sets, except for I need a couple more from the Bounty Hunter set, because I haven't finished off that one yet. And I still need a couple from the Champions of the Forest one right before that. But I pretty much got most of all the sets. I just finished my Sith Army, and I just finally got a War Master Sabah Law from the Sith Army. Yeah, dude, I just finished that 19-book Star Wars series, the whole, what do they call it, the one with the Yuuzhan Vong. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's only 19 books.
Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars. No, but
yeah, that one.
I started reading the books because of the game. The miniatures game made me start thinking, who are all these characters? And I read the books. It's freaking awesome. The other thing I'd love to do would be a Game of Thrones miniatures game. I've been reading the Game of Thrones novels. They're awesome, dude. They're so good. That dude is such a good writer. That dude being Robert R.R. Jordan. But that game, those books are going to be
George R.R. Totally Martin.
No, this is his cousin. Whatever the hell it is.
Okay. His wife, brother, sister, brother.
Yeah. Anyway, the books are awesome. It'd be cool to do a miniature game based on that.
What are you playing, Steve?
Dave and I have both been in deep mourning. Platinum Plus closed months ago. We haven't been able to recover since. So.
But you had a chance to play with all those weeks.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
All those weeks.
We play Castles on Stage every once in a while. We haven't had time.
Nothing sad about that.
I haven't had time to experiment with games or play other games or any of that.
Just experimenting with all those weeds.
Just experimenting with all those weeds, mourning over Platinum Plus's demise. that's my off time, so.
All right.
The days of the Holy Pilgrimage are over, so. It's all right.
All right, well, I think we've covered everything.
We
covered everything and out of beer, so I've got to go back down to the hotel lobby.
What Chinese food is this?
This is not ours. It's snacky now. We got to get out of here. All right. Thank you, Joseph Goodman.
Thanks, Alan.
And Steve Chenault. I don't know how to mispronounce your name.
That's all right.
It's pronounced Stefan.
No, not that. No,
it's all right. All right, thanks a lot. I'll see you next year.
You're going to edit this, right?
No, not at all. Not even a little bit.
And that was Joe Goodman and Steven Chenault from Goodman Games and Troll Lord, respectively.
Yep.
And we thank them for talking with us. And
or Good Lord Games, as they like to say sometimes. Never mind.
Okay. Yeah, what else have we got on DungeonCon? What jumped out at you, Alan? Chris, I don't know that you got to spend any time at the show.
I was not there.
Okay. Endgame was there, but you were not there.
Oh, yes. I have stories, but I was not there, so Alan should keep going.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I want to hear the endgame side of things as well. The endgame was the entire end section of the dealer's room, appropriately.
Yeah.
Big presence there.
Yeah.
And it seemed pretty active, though not quite as active as last year. At least that was my impression of it.
No, it was much, 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 much more active.
Really?
Okay. We were 28% up.
Wow. And last year was supposedly record-breaking for most people in the dealer's room.
We did very, very well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I was
with some other vendors.
I was very pleased. I didn't do any of the show. I'm kind of not doing local cons anymore because my back is just bad enough that I can't stand that long.
Ooh.
So I send my valuable partners and my minions out, and they do a good job. So props to them, baby. It was nice because one of my partners, who isn't as active in the store anymore, Finn, went out there and did work the booth for a day. So that was kind of fun.
I saw Finn out there.
Yeah, and he had a blast, so that was kind of cool. But more on stuff. I mean, I've got other stuff, but I want to hear more on Alan's stuff.
Okay. Well, I have to say, the one thing I noticed just sell out at the show was the few copies that Aldo Ghiazzi brought of Esoterrorists from Pellegrin Press.
Mm-hmm.
It was the only thing I noticed that just got blown out. I think by midday Saturday, it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice to see. People are aware of it, seeking it out.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller press items. Now, of course, it's got a big name, Robin Laws, behind it. I'm kind of wondering if the Robin Laws name is going to make Firefly Games' licensed version of Og later this year blow out as well. Robin Laws is doing that. It's going to be out for Gen Con. I was talking with Patrick Sweeney of Firefly Games about it. They've changed a couple of words so the cavemen can say slightly different things now. Tree is now stick, you know, things like that. That if you're into it, you'll know that could actually make a difference. supposedly, it's more campaign capable. And the interesting thing that Patrick mentioned was that Robin Laws apparently had to revise the rules his ongoing draft before turning it into Patrick after a near total party kill against a hive of bees. So
wow,
that was amusing.
That's some bees.
Let's see, what else did I hear about? Of course, had to go hang out at the Hero Games party.
Yes.
Saturday night for a little while.
One of the fine traditions of the show.
With the bathtub full of booze and soda. Not poured out, but you know.
Ew.
And Ken Hite popped up there and at various other places. He was all over the show. He usually is.
I'd like to quickly give myself some pimpage.
Okay.
Over at 2d6feet.com, we have an hour and 16 minutes with Ken Hite.
If you can stand that much Ken Hite in one dose.
Oh, it's good stuff. I of course miss this because I'm still getting over like this just hellish flu. So my friend Chris Bennett actually stepped in for me and Brian
did the
interview. So
yes, you say we, but it wasn't even you.
It was me in spirit.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was there. You know, I had mentally prepared Brian to meet with such a luminary, you know, on his grounds. So I consider it mostly me.
Right on.
Did this take place DunderCon weekend while Ken was out here?
This took place Friday of last week, so whenever that was.
Okay.
Yeah, he was staying in Oakland, so he came down and saw Endgame, which was nice, and, you know, they had a nice chat.
I saw Brian at the con on Saturday, and he seemed super distracted, so I thought maybe I was seeing him right before that, but I guess not.
No, you were seeing him right before his 28-person... samurai crazy thing that he does.
That's right.
We should get him back on and have him talk about that.
I would love to have him talk about how his big game technique has changed with his new system. Definitely.
I know a little bit, but I'd rather have him tell the story. But I mean, some really interesting things developed over the previous year. So and we have that show that we talked about that. So that would be an interesting listen.
Definitely.
You know, to compare them.
Okay.
And he talked about this more recent game a bit at 2D6 Feet as well.
I think. Yeah, he did. I think he talked about it on episode 12, which is the one that we just put up.
All right. So you can go over to 2D6Feet.com and get high on height, as well as many other things.
Thank you for the pimpage.
But back to DunderCon.
DunderCon, still on Ken Height's subject. He's doing a Cthulhu project with the Gumshoe rules, the same rules used in Esoterrorists. Also through Pelgrane Press, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And he also mentioned he was doing Adventures into Darkness, I believe is what you said the name was, Chris. A source book based on the comic series that H.P. Lovecraft would have written if he had survived his cancer and gone on to write comics for Mutants and Mastermind. Which explains why I saw him walking through the hallway with Steve Kenson of Green Ronin, a seminar that I completely missed due to work on the weekend. I had to split my time between the two. What else was interesting? I saw, it seemed, a lot more women there this year than in previous years.
Awesome.
And several of my friends commented on that. Not like, hey, check her out, but just there were a lot more people of the female variety there.
Okay.
And that was nice to see, a little more equal distribution, not just all guys all the time.
But was it equal distribution, or did it seem like maybe the women were coming out of one culture in particular or another of the many represented at the show?
Well, I don't know if LARPs had anything to do with it. They seem to dominate in those particular games.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid the L word there. But
well,
it's cool.
You know, a lot of other people really like it. I don't know. I could not attribute it to any one thing. There just seemed to be a lot more of them. Also, folks were commenting that this seems to be almost at the point where the kids of gamers are going to be coming to the show and be consumers and gamers as well. Almost. It's starting to get there, and soon there's just going to be a wave of new ones. At least that's what folks were anticipating at the State of the Industry seminar and things of that nature.
A little generational rollover. Gamers?
Yeah, little replace yourself in the population with more little gamers so that the industry
someone more useful.
Yes. Bring us more cash.
Yes.
What else was going on? There were a couple of new little companies that I hadn't seen before. Stone Tablet Games, which was actually out of San Ramon, which was where DungeonCon was held.
Yeah.
They had a couple of little board games there that they were selling. Big Finger Games is apparently a fairly well-established PDF publisher that I was completely unfamiliar with, but they had a fair number of print products now as well, and they were selling both.
Yeah, good. How do you sell PDFs at a con?
Just stop the PDFs and keep going.
Okay.
I just don't want to hear any more hate. Just keep going.
Put the blinders on, keep walking. And there was one kind of interesting idea that took place that had nothing to do with any of the vendors. The guy I know who's been a local game master, actually out in the Pleasant Hill area, in the same area as DungeonCon, he decided to get together a sort of impromptu Dungeon Master Summit and just kind of grabbed all the Dungeon Masters that he knew and some others that he sort of knew and pulled them all together Sunday morning to just debate various Dungeons and Dragons rules issues, house rules issues.
That's a really good idea.
How would you take care of X situation? How would you do this? You know, and I did not get in on it. I was somewhere to be. But from what I heard, it was a very, very interesting discussion, very lively, a lot of animated debate. And everyone came away from it feeling pretty stoked about doing it again next year.
That sounds really exciting, actually.
Yeah.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's something missing is especially from traditional role playing is there's no community of practice. There's not an established thing of people just sharing wisdom with one another. So that's a really cool idea. I'm surprised that I haven't seen that at a con before.
It may just be new to us. I really don't.
That's true. that's certainly true.
So those were the big things I saw.
All right, cool. Chris, can you speak to a little bit more to as far as what Endgame was selling? I presume, if not a majority, then a plurality of the money was, you know, focused on RPG products.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting. That show is it's fairly diverse in what we bring and what we sell. We didn't go miniatures heavy at all this time, but we brought a bunch of Reaper.
Okay.
And it did very, very well.
Cool.
But we didn't bring hardly any War Machine. We didn't bring hardly any Confrontation. We brought no Flames of War, no 40K, no Fantasy Battle, none of that stuff.
Okay.
We did bring full-line Infinity the Game miniatures.
Mm.
And that did fairly well, just because I think it's new and shiny.
Okay.
And lots of RPGs. The Story Game products did phenomenally well for us. We brought 13 copies of Spirit of the Century, and were sold out by 10:30 on Sunday morning.
Nice.
And we brought 10 copies of Dogs in the Vineyard and were sold out by like noon on Sunday. So those games just continue to do very, very well at cons for us. And I should thank the fine folks at Indie Press Revolution for making those orders happen and making them easy for us. So
right on.
And let's see what else. We sold some Crystal Cast Dice, you know, that always does well at the cons. People treat themselves to things like that there. You know, those are the dice made out of semi-precious stones and, you know,
right. Nice
metals and stuff like that. D&D did very well. We sold a lot of Dungeons & Dragons this year, which was nice to see. Dungeons & Dragons is feeling kind of flat to me right now. I mean, it still sells, but they're getting into the minutia product, which doesn't seem to be exciting to the community as a whole. You know,
yeah.
It gets some people's interest, but, you know, others are like, that's not what I do.
Well, the Scoundrel that generated excitement in my group, but that was January.
Yeah.
And now the most interesting thing any of them could think of in the products was, Rich Berlew from Order of the Stick co-wrote Dungeon Craft. Ooh,
yeah.
Well, do I really need that?
It has sold like ass, too, so.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, no. Complete Scoundrel did pretty well, and what's going to start doing well for us is the Player's Handbook 2, because it's just going into Living, like this month or something like that. So that's about to become an official book for them, and that's always good for us. So, we're tangenting onto D&D, but it's just like I say, it was very surprising for us to sell that much stuff.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Board games always do well for us at the cons, and it's usually kind of flavor of the month. So, yeah, a little bit of everything, you know.
Right
on. Oh, and you know what did okay? It was on the side. It certainly wasn't a huge percentage of our sales or anything, but we were selling WoW boosters and WoW starters for the CCG very well. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, and this is to a gaming audience, very much not to a collector audience or to
right.
somebody who would, you know, just be scarfing
right.
them down looking for items or whatever. So
yeah. And just really quickly, D&D minis also felt like it did fairly well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of D&D minis.
Yes.
And referencing back, you mentioned Reaper a little earlier.
Yeah.
Just today, this announcement took us totally by surprise.
Yeah.
Reaper is doing pre-painted plastic miniatures, apparently just packaging them the exact same way they package their minis now.
Well, yeah. It sounds like.
That's what I've gathered, is just you have a little plastic blister pack, and you can look at the thing, and it's there, and you know what it is, and you just get it, and that's it. And
they're calling it the ready-to-fight line?
Legendary Adventures, I thought it was.
Oh, I just see down here, Legendary Encounters, first product line of Reaper's new ready-to-fight series.
Okay. Oh, Legendary Encounters.
And honestly, the only bummer about these things, and I don't know why Reaper keeps doing this, you know, they're tied to miniatures rule systems.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming out. It's like, I mean, you don't have to buy the rules, obviously. You can use them for your D&D game and everyone's
right.
happy, right? But, you know, Warlord, not so much.
Yeah,
you know, that was not a big thing.
It would be nice if they learned that nobody cares about that, but I don't think it's
yeah.
hurting anyone.
I hope it's certainly not hurting them, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
mean, they do good products. I don't want them to, you know, lose money on something that kind of is a no-brainer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm sure they're, you know, horribly offended that I'm saying this, but I couldn't sell any copies of Warlord. I had it on my shelves for months, and I finally gave them away.
Wow.
You know? So I've kind of got some first-hand experience on this one, and,
right.
you know, I'm not the only retailer that's happened to. So.
Yeah, no, I totally feel you on that. I just don't think there's a lot of interest in there. So, I mean, CAV, I've seen a teeny-weeny
oh, sure.
interest in it.
And I'm not talking about that. I mean,
yeah.
that's a game system they kind of started up, and, you know, some figures that came up around it. And, you know, why can't this be the same thing? Because I just don't think their skill set lies there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
And now we're throwing them hate, but really, what I want to say is thank
no,
you
no,
for
no. Yeah, yeah,
putting
totally.
Out pre-painted plastic miniatures in a non-collectible format.
Yes, please don't get me wrong there. I'm just kind of saying I hope they're not harming themselves, because I wish them very, very well for doing this.
Definitely, definitely.
You know?
There have been several companies that tried doing this with little sets.
Mm-hmm.
Holistic Design way back when, Crystal Cast.
Yeah, yeah.
But none of them really took off.
Yeah,
and they didn't have a range either. They just had like uh-uh. two or three sets.
Yeah, I think if you're not selling miniatures for a game, and those sets weren't, then you're selling to role players, and they don't want the bill of goods. You know, they want
that's
the
right.
one figure that they
yeah.
want.
Well, actually, a couple of those had D20 stats for all the figures.
Yeah.
But again, that's not what people wanted. They just wanted to be able to get third figure from the left and not all those other ones.
Yeah, yeah. When you're selling figures to role players, they tend to want individual figures, is what I'm saying.
And
right.
let's jump into the realm of possibilities here, because that's awesome as it is. Like, you know, okay, here's my little single thief figure, and that's all I want, and I'll pay. Now, we don't know how much these are going to cost, because they haven't mentioned that yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, $5 seems reasonable to me, and I hope they can get it in at that price, because I think that would be perfect.
Totally.
But think about, like, little packs of goblins and little packs of orcs, so that you have little, you know, skirmish
yeah.
boxes of,
yes.
of plastic figures.
That's what I wanted D&D to do.
Yeah, and, you know, I've got to wonder, who did I read this from? Was it Pramus? Somebody's blog. I think it might have been Chris Pramus's. I'm not sure. It was somebody saying that they were thinking D&D minis was kind of getting towards its end. And it made sense the way it was put. You know, that
mm-hmm.
they're just kind of going into diminishing returns at this point. And boy, did Dreamblade fracture the base there, you know? So anyway.
Yeah. So that's going to be a real question in June when these Reaper things come out, is are we just going to see D&D minis really lose a huge component of what's kept it afloat?
I think they might. I think they might. I mean, it might take some time for Reaper to get a good, you know, catalog of these figures out there. But boy, these are launching in June and it's already March. These things must be ready to go.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to be very towards the end of the production cycle if these things are going to come over on a container from China, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
They've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah. They know their market pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, we're excited to see those.
Yeah, very much so.
And what are we playing?
Can I start this? Because I've got a couple of things from the show.
Yes,
actually from DungeonCon.
Do it.
Along with Thomas Denmark and Merwin, one of Ogre Cave's regular reviewers,
co-designer of Dead Knight. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Got to play test the next Dungeoneer card game set. Same stuff, bigger. You know, bigger levels, some building levels of nastiness that just get worse and worse as the game goes on. Good stuff. It's not a broken game. Don't fix it. You know, just keep on going. That seems to be what he's doing.
Really quickly, I just am curious about this whole thing because I think the Dungeoneer series is one of the coolest concepts, you know, in like small pocket gaming. You know, I just love it. But it is just dead for us. You know, we used to move that game, and it's just not so much anymore. I mean, we sold some at the con, but it doesn't move otherwise. And I'm just curious if people are still playing, or they're done, or what.
I kind of think that that's a game where once you have a couple of sets, you're mm-hmm. good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You don't need all the new, big, cool ones. I think they all have something unique to them.
Mm-hmm,
and
agreed.
If you're really into it, you can get a totally different experience out of each one or by combining them or things like that. But
right.
for just the casual gamer, if you've got a Dungeoneer, you're good, it seems like. Or at least that's the buying pattern that I've seen.
And I think what I'm going to suggest for, you know, the folks who make Dungeoneer, if they are listening, is it would be so cool to port that system into, like, superheroes or, like, space dudes or something else like that just to kind of start it fresh again for a few people, because I think you're hitting the point, and that's what's holding my sales back, at least, and, you know, maybe their sales overall. Now, I could be totally wrong and whatever, but that's just my experience.
I don't know. I think changing the theme up, there's a limit to how much that's going to help them when they're doing a card game. And, I mean, they have changed the theme up a bit. They've done the sort of Arctic-themed one.
Yeah.
And they've done a bit with that. I think when you do a card game, like, if you're doing something like Pirates of the Spanish Main, you can change the theme up, and it's very cool because it's more tactile and it's models and things like that. But when you're doing a card game, I think the standard goes up a little bit. And I almost wish they would do a little bit more of a talisman thing where they're building on kind of new sub-games and new whole things to go into the corner of a dungeon or something.
Good. I don't know. It just seems like more of the same isn't getting it anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
Well, according to Tom Denmark, the game has been doing well, not outstandingly so, but still doing well, and, you know, well enough for them to come out with new additions every so often.
Yeah.
So I think what he's splitting his time between is helping with the other author, whose last name I can't remember, his name's Richard, on the Dungeoneer RPG for Goodman Games, which Joseph mentioned in the interview. We only got maybe 20 minutes into actual play, but it only took 5 minutes for character creation, and it was just so quick and yet had enough depth, deceptively enough depth for the speed of creating the characters. You just chose four little attributes. You know, I'm going to be a curious, dwarven, avenging rogue. Ta-da, you're done making a character. Now, of course, any other curious, dwarven, avenging rogue will be the exact same character. But there were enough multiple choices to be made that for a quick little RPG, which is what they're shooting for, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. Gameplay is going to use the actual cards where the dungeon lord, I believe they call it, is going to
slap down the cards in a preset order that he's already got plotted out.
It's a pick-up dungeon crawl kind of a thing.
It is kind of a pick-up dungeon crawl RPG. I think they're aiming for like a 2-hour play time or something like that, which is kind of what the card game ends up being for me, even though it's supposed to be shorter.
Mm.
So I think they may well have a hit when it comes out. They're planning to have it as a box set with some cards, a couple of books, thin paper books, and probably a couple of miniatures as well. So that'll be neat to see.
All right.
Probably early 2008. Beyond that, I didn't really play much at home. I've been getting D&D in every week and way too much Guitar Hero. So.
Nice.
Is it on the Xbox now?
It is almost on the Xbox, but my wife, when she found out about Guitar Hero, ran out and bought a PlayStation 2.
Oh my God.
Lower price. So she's a rocker at heart, so there was no question as soon as she found out about it.
Wow.
I should have just told her about it years ago. But
seriously.
Anyway, who's next?
I have one game under my belt. Zach, who runs our game group where we focus mainly on indie games, and he listens to the show. Hello, Zach. He was prepping. He does kind of a mini con with friends every year, and they focus on a lot of their old, games that they hold close to their heart from way back when. Zach is clearly an enormous, enormous Call of Cthulhu fan, and he ran a short scenario for us that just kicked ass in every way. The prep, he had sound effects. He had a great kind of table set up. He had a little micro system kind of built onto the game where each time that if anybody is going to be in his game and it hasn't happened yet, you should stop listening now. he handed out little slips to each character. They were pre-gen characters, but he handed us a little slip whenever we lost above a certain threshold of sanity points in one go.
Mm-hmm.
He handed us a little slip, and he had a sequence of them for each character. And it kind of took you through, oh, you have this weird little vision, and then you have this command that you have to fulfill with your actions later on in the game. And he had a sequence of these for each character to give a little bit of narrative to how each character goes insane. And the commands were things like, destroy something on the ship. Oh, this was all a future spaceship scenario as well.
Okay.
I should point that out. So it was like, destroy something on the ship. Lie to somebody, and escalating it up to, murder and grossness and lighting fires and whatever.
Cool.
And it was just, all the people who say that I only give hate to traditional RPGs and only give love to the story games, I believe, always said that if you put in the prep, if you love the game, and if you're talented and committed, straight up participationism, classic RPGs are just a great time. And this game was a great time.
Yeah, and any RPG with the right GM and the right crew can be a blast.
Yeah.
Absolute blast.
Absolutely. And that doesn't change, a lot of the complaints that I have about that way of doing things. But the fact is, when you have somebody, talented and committed, it is a blast. So thank you, Zach, for running that game.
Yeah, sounds good. You know what you're reminding me of, though?
What?
I actually jumped into a game of Betrayal at House on the Hill at Dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
Completely forgot until just now. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
It is still so sad that they put that game out of print.
It is.
It really is.
Yeah, it really is.
Everyone who's heard that has been like, what? What the hell? Just print that one game. If the rest didn't sell, so what?
Damn
it.
Yeah. That game can really sing. It can go wrong.
Oh, yeah. But it can go really right, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I almost wish they would just take it and kind of nudge it the rest of the way towards role-playing game. But
then
it really wouldn't sell, probably. But, Chris, what do you got?
I think I'm striking out this time. I've been just heinously busy because we had that con and, well, we had two cons in a row, so that was hard.
Yeah, you did Shield before that, right? The week
that
before.
That was exciting. And, done. And then we had DunderCon the next weekend, so I didn't really get a lot of free time. So it was mostly man the store and get the store ready for the con and this and that. So
Was there any frantic going back to the store for something that you sold out of at the con, that sort of thing?
It does. We always make like a trip back in case we've sold out of something. Nothing ever is really truly crucial, but we did a pretty good job this time, and we had the booth well stocked and didn't really have any problems at all. So it was kind of a nice experience this year.
Cool.
Did you talk to anybody? Like, I'm totally going back on something because we didn't really get a chance to finish there. Did you hear any people's experiences with DunderCon? You talked a lot about, who you saw and blah, blah, blah. But how about people getting in their games, percentage of you know, hits as compared to misses? Because I've heard a lot of that so far from the show.
Well, I didn't hear of any problems related to that. The one guy that I try to see every year who's from my original gaming group, and he lives like an hour away, so I try to play something with him at DunderCon. He was so busy playing stuff, I never got a chance.
Okay.
He was just constantly in something. However, most of that was in open gaming.
Okay.
So I didn't really hear of any big problems, maybe because the people that I was talking to weren't really trying that hard to get into scheduled games. Did you hear something to that nature?
I think every single person who's come into the store has said they had a really good time at DunderCon because they made their own time of it, because every single event they tried to get into, they weren't able to. So it just blows my mind. You know, that show is just obviously so space constrained that they could be satisfying a lot more people's needs if they were just, you know, if they would move it or something. But
supposedly there was construction going on, so some of the parking lot was taken up.
No, none of that was true. You know, the hotel was totally normal, and I thought that was all going to be the case, and I have people telling me that the hotel was like it always is. So,
well, it seemed like this time the section of the parking lot that was normally reserved only for staff was wide open. Anyone could park there.
Yeah.
And that alleviated any problem that there might have been, even though I didn't really see anything other than the pool was indeed roped off, but I didn't see any construction going on.
That was the only thing that happened, and, you know, whatever, big deal, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I was kind of just curious if you'd heard anything about that.
I did not actually hear anyone complaining that they hadn't gotten into a game. I know my friend Steve Connie, who's been on the show before, his Cyberpunk game was way beyond full. I think he let 9 or 10 people into what was a 6-person game just so he could accept more. So it was kind of a good year, people wanting to play. And
oh, yeah, it was busy.
Yeah.
So that's it. We're done, right?
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was a good, strong show this year, I thought.
Good.
Yeah. And thus ends a good, strong episode of the Old Cave Audio Report.
I'm anxious to talk about Games Expo next time, because probably that will just be happening as we record the next show. So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be real interesting to see
how
that one shakes
out. I got to tell you, just tangentially, I'm very impressed. I'm not a big fan of Games Quarterly and stuff like that, but I've been very, very impressed with how they are handling the marketing and, you know, promotion of this show. It's got me kind of wanting to go. I'm not gonna, but it's starting to get more appealing, you know? So I'll be interested to hear how it actually flies. So.
Yeah, we're going to have to put our feelers out and see how people get their business done or just what, in general, the show operates like.
Yeah, totally.
It's a big unknown at this point.
Agreed.
But yeah, we will tell you all about that next time. Thank you all for listening, as always, and for keeping the faith with us. I'm Mike Sugarbaker.
And I'm not.
Cool.
I'm Alan Sugar.
And I'm not. Oh, I got stepped on again.
Oh.
Again! Again, mind you! Now I will take my time. My time, man!
I'm being quiet.
It's good. It's good. Okay. And I'm Chris Andrews.
All right. Thank you all for listening. See you next time.
Later, yo.